the newsmakers and newsbreakers of today. Talk to the people who are involved in current events and headline issues. Talk radio is your invitation to a learning experience. Talk radio is
Bill Jenkins.
It's our new time. Yours and mine, 9 o'clock on a Saturday night. Welcome to Open Mind. And for the next 3 hours, we are here to stretch yours just a little bit. We've had such a marvelous time the last couple of weeks talking about your physical and spiritual self. We've gotten into mediumship with Thomas Jacobson and Frieda Fell. But tonight, let's get back into science. Let's get back into the real world, yours and mine. We have talked so much about the ELF waves, the scalar wave technology. The new vistas of science that are in front of us, they are marvelous. These new avenues of science that are in front of us, awesome at the same time if they are misused. Nothing more awesome, I guess, than the new technology. And I am so delighted to have with me tonight a man who can speak freely and with a great deal of authority about these, Dr. Bob Beck. Robert, welcome to Open Mind. We haven't talked to you in a long time. We've never had you in the studio before, but we have talked about the Russian weather control and some of the other things on the phone. You and Bill Bice, who've been doing so much valuable, valuable work in this field.
Well, a lot of our good friends have been with you, and I've been listening, and I've been sort of low profile, of course.
You've been very... I've been trying to greet you for 2 years, okay. Robert. Where have you been?
Here we are.
And you're here tonight, and I am so delighted that you are. And we have so much to talk about in the next 3 hours. Let me ask you a few questions. Are the Russians manipulating our weather?
I don't know. I rather suspect that they have the technology for doing this. I've seen a couple of translations of their efforts in that direction. It's feasible that if they somehow change the energy patterns of the jet streams, they can most certainly affect the weather patterns locally. And there are rumors that if they have done this, it's backfired. All we have to do is look at their own wheat production.
They don't do anything well.
They don't do anything well.
What about the cold explosions off Japan and Korea?
I followed that with a great deal of interest. I just really don't know. I heard a remarkable report about one of these direct from the pilot just a few days ago. Apparently, almost an ice cloud had developed.
I don't want to put any... Maybe we ought to explain what a cold explosion is. I know that's sort of a misnomer. Do you want to go ahead and explain
No. Let's sort of stick to the ELF and some of the things that I do feel I'm up to speed on.
Well, a cold explosion, because we opened up that can of worms.
Go ahead and explain.
Okay. Yeah, what is that, a cold explosion?
Oh, you go ahead.
You're much more qualified than I.
Well, there have been a number of signatures that appeared to be atomic explosions, and the planes flying through the area picked up no radioactive debris. Almost a virtual explosion, such as Tom Bearden has talked about, instead of an actual one. I really don't know too much about that. There's a great deal of speculation, and I don't have any official, let's say, fallout on those.
Well, what we're seeing here, as I understand it, no, I'm not a scientist, and I'm just a journalist. Just a guy here that is very interested in all these things going on. That we see this anomaly, if you want to call it that, where all at once there is a sudden draining of energy from a certain area, which causes heat to go away.
Oh, okay.
All right, heat goes away, and now it's very, very cold, and this sucks up a lot of moisture out of the ocean. Generally, these explosions are over the ocean, and we see a funnel of clouds going up 60 or 70,000 feet in the air, and they're very, very cold. Now, we've never seen that before. Usually when something causes that to go up in the air like that, we're talking about heat that does that. But these are cold explosions, as they were. They have all the signatures of an explosion, except the shock waves, and there's no radiation. There's just a massive movement of air and a drain of energy. Now, Tom Bearden will tell us that that is caused by the movement of the scalar wave transmitters in the Soviet Union. Whenever they come...
Standing waves.
The standing waves, when they come and they cross with each other, they can either drain energy from that area or they can pump energy into that area, depending on what they want to do. Now, we know when we make something very cold, we have a low-pressure zone that's going to develop around that very quickly. If a couple hundred miles away, you reverse that process and create energy, you got a high-pressure area.
And you can certainly move things around with those two.
If you have a low-pressure area and a high-pressure area, and you can move them around at your discretion, aren't we in touch with a lot of fun?
Well, it looks like these are interesting times.
Tell us about the ELF waves. I know that you know, you and I have talked about those before, and how those are affecting weather, the mind, and everything else.
I hate to admit this, but it was a series of serendipities, rather lucky accidents. I became fascinated with consciousness enhancement with EEG biofeedback in the late 1960s, and I'd followed Dr. Joe Camilla's work, the work at the Menninger Clinic of the Greens. And at that time, I didn't want to wait for a year or two on the waiting list, for example, at Barbara Brown's facility at VA Sepulveda, so I developed my own EEG biofeedback equipment. Yeah, and I was the most popular kid on the block. Around 1969 or 70, people were inviting me to dinner and said, well, bring your biofeedback apparatus. So one thing led to another. We began manufacturing these. And during the course of traveling, teaching health professionals to alter their brain waves and assist their subjects, I had one foot on each banana peel. My basic, training was in the physical sciences, but I also had this intense interest in consciousness and, the enhancement of human abilities. So when I was in an area, I would have the opportunity of measuring the brain waves of the shamans, the witch doctors, the healers, the hexenmeisters. We found a very unusual thing, that most of their brain waves would seem to center at about 7.8 hertz when they were in their operating state. These were the real ones, the dowsers, the people who had a track record of absolutely delivering what they thought they were doing. And I later found that that was the principal note of the Schumann resonances. These were the electromagnetic pulsations that exist in the Earth ionosphere cavity. The Earth itself has sort of a magnetic signature. It's called the Earth's brainwave. And this brought up the question that if some of these people with remarkable talents were showing the same signature, which was right on the alpha-theta border, could it be that somehow they were tuning in to this ELF, or extreme low-frequency magnetic pulsation? Maybe this was the master drummer. Perhaps these people were marching to the sound of the same drummer, and we could find it in nature. In about 1962, an absolutely fascinating study was done at the University of Rhode Island with Drs. Polk and Fitchin, who were incidentally funded by the government, the Defense Nuclear Agency, actually, to see if they could measure this predicted pulse. When they built the apparatus, began seeing the signature, the most amazing thing developed. They could not tell the trace from that from a human brainwave. And this was published in the 1960s in the National Bureau of Standards Division of Radio Propagation Journal. So this raised the interesting question. We wonder if these people who had remarkable talents were somehow tuning to this same signal in the atmosphere. Maybe this was the drummer. So I proceeded to develop, because I couldn't afford to buy one at that time, extremely sensitive ELF magnetometers. So we went back, made brainwave studies on one track of the recording. We would have the brainwave of the magic person, whatever his discipline might be. On the other, the actual ELF signature. And strangely enough, a number of these people were locked in synchronization with this little signal that was down in the millionths of a Gauss. Gauss is a measurement of magnetic intensity. I reported this in 1973, and of course at this time it was sheer heresy. Fortunately, there have been a number of international conferences, bioelectronic medicine, and Various scientists have replicated this work.
Well, you've got to feel at home here because this show is known as Sheer Heresy also, but that's all right. We've been proven right time and time again. Go ahead.
Then we'll talk heresy.
Yeah, we'll talk heresy.
About 1976, a very, very powerful transmitter came on the air, and this turned out to be the Soviet woodpecker.
Is that the one at Riga?
That was Riga and Gomel. This was postulated to be the original site. There are others.
There are many others now. Right?
Many others. And these things were putting out such a tremendous H vector, or magnetic pulse, that we could no longer measure the Schumann resonances. In other words, these were much stronger than the natural ambient in which man had evolved for many centuries, many thousands of years, perhaps. So we began wondering what effect this would have on mass consciousness.
Well, let's stop there just a second, Bob. We're talking about we're always responding to this ELF because the Earth produces it.
Right.
Now, all at once, man produces a signal in that very same frequency that is thousands of times stronger. Is that what we're saying?
Well, at least hundreds.
Or at least hundreds of times.
Now, what is this beginning to do to evolution, global consciousness, etc.? And my good friend, Dr. Puharich.
Maria? Yeah.
Right. Who has...
Sat right there in that chair where you are.
Right. He has made perhaps more contributions of value to the areas of psychotronics and consciousness and New Age physics than anyone we know. Took an interest in this, so we went back to his Faraday cage in Ossining, New York, set up an experiment which absolutely, totally proved that these small magnetic pulses, which at that time I was generating with a little box that would go in your shirt pocket, would penetrate this many-layered Faraday cage. The Faraday cage is a shielded room that has multiple layers of copper, soft iron.
Lots of copper.
And the objective is to shield out any type of electromagnetic disturbance. At this time, Dr. Puharich was working on some extremely sensitive hearing aid assistance mm-hmm. devices. And much to both of our amazements, we found that his brainwaves and the brainwaves of the subject would absolutely track in frequency and amplitude this small signal that was being generated outside of the sealed Faraday cage. We have those chart recordings, and we'll probably be showing them next week at a little seminar that Paul's put together here. So it behooved us to report this to the United Nations.
Wait a minute. Give me the information on the seminar, because I want to go.
Okay. I was sort of talked into this. I'm rather low profile, but my good friend Paul Andrews said that we should do something called Occult Influences in Modern Health, an electromagnetics survival seminar. Now, in case anyone is nattering at the word occult, we're using it in the strictest dictionary scientific meaning, which simply means hidden.
Hidden or sacred.
Right. Now, many years...
It's not weird and evil and any of those things. We have a somatical problem.
Right.
Now, people who listen to the show know that for the most part. But we're on a new hour tonight.
So let's change this word to hidden influences in health and disease.
Okay.
An electromagnetic survival seminar. And what we're talking about basically are some of the new problems that have emerged just in the last 10 years. When my grandparents were on the frontier, we were worried about smallpox and cholera and typhoid fever and maybe Indians. And we don't have this problem anymore.
Is that worse?
We have things that are worse. And these are in the electromagnetic spectrum. And these are definitely influencing our moods, our health, our mental acuity, our anxiety and depression coefficients. So we've developed over the years a number of fairly simple, fairly straightforward, and very inexpensive instruments that any 14-year-old kid can build from Radio Shack parts that will detect these things and in some cases provide countermeasures.
You can produce your own ELF in your environment.
Yes, you can. They've been doing this in Europe for a number of years, little mm-hmm. devices that are worn in the shirt pocket, etc. No relation to others. We'll talk about the real McCoy at the seminar. So what we thought we would do, and because more and more people are genuinely concerned, is to put together a day in which we'll have a lot of dialogue, give out a whole lot of information, show a lot of slides, give people reprints of some of the articles of that we feel are basically the survival tools of the future. And it will be held at the Los Angeles Airport Marriott Hotel. That will be Saturday, October the 13th, from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. And there's a telephone number where you might call to get more information. And that's area code 213-393-9405. Now, we hope too many people don't show up, because we're going to measure brainwaves of some of them and demonstrate to volunteers only that we can alter those brainwaves from a distance with little blue boxes, little black boxes. We're going to demonstrate how you can find some of these hidden influences to which we're all amenable. And we should have a darn good time by opening up this dialogue on some of the New Age occult influences. But this
hidden,
all right.
Hidden.
Better word. But getting back to the track, we took the brainwave chart recordings that we'd made in Dr. Puharich's Faraday cage in Ossining. This is before he was firebombed. That facility, of course, was burned down, and the cage was destroyed. And Puharich felt it was some government agents that thought he was making too much noise in these no-no areas.
Well, he was making a lot of noise.
He was and is, bless
his heart. We wouldn't think that our government would do anything like that.
No.
Or lie to us.
No.
Or any of those things.
So
or take away our freedoms. Or go ahead.
Anyway, we established to almost everyone's satisfaction that these things did exist, that they were an actuality. And strangely enough, at that time, there were only about three of these ELF magnetometers in the world, and two of them were in the back seat of my old Chevy. The other one, of course, was back at the University of Rhode Island. So we began doing some surveys of where these Soviet woodpeckers' standing waves, at least the magnetic vectors, were popping up. To digress a moment, I was radiological defense chief of District 17 here in Los Angeles back in the late 60s, and I sort of knew the ropes on tracking down the bad stuff. In those days, mostly what we had to worry about were the X-ray machines and the shoe stores, and the kids were getting a tremendous dosage. These were the types of things that in those days were radiological hazards. But now we had a new player on the scene. A lot of people were sensitive to these influences, hidden influences. So I was called by the University of Oregon Health Physics Department during the flap when the Soviet woodpecker materialized as a sort of a health hazard in Eugene, Corvallis.
What I want you to do now, Bob, let us stop right there, because we're talking about something that I get as much mail about as anything else, and that's the Soviet woodpecker in Washington and Oregon, and what it's done to the people up there, what it's still doing to the people up there. And let's explain that in detail. But before we do, let me, in detail, do some things that I have to do here. I'm Bill Jenkins. With me is Dr. Robert Beck. We're talking about the fringes of science, in a way, that just may, well, you probably don't even know they exist. You haven't been with me before. This is the 9 o'clock hour. We've got a whole new group aboard. You may be frightened, but there's a lot of beauty to it, too. We'll be back in just a moment. Beck tonight, Robert Beck, who I suppose as much as anyone I know knows about the ELF signals that is primarily are being generated in the Soviet Union. Who knows what their original intent was? Perhaps it was weather control. But we do know that the fallout has affected the northwestern part of the United States, if not the southern part of California. In fact, we can certainly detect them here, but they were certainly much up there. I'm looking at some headlines here from the Eugene Register Guard. Mystery signals discovered in the Eugene area. This is November. I'm not wearing my glasses. Here we are. 1978. Mystery signals may cause illness. Mysterious radio signals causing concern in Oregon. That's from the Oregon Journal. We didn't hear too much about that down here in Southern California.
There was such a news blackout on this. There was a little bitty article in the Los Angeles Times, a fairly large article in the Santa Monica paper, and it made headlines in most of the major cities for about 3 or 4 days. And then it became extremely controversial. Lots of hypochondriacs came out, as well as people who had legitimate complaints. And the city fathers, perhaps wisely, decided that it was time for a news blackout, or let's confuse this with as much
flack as possible.
Exactly.
Which, of course, causes editors at radio stations, television stations, and newspapers to look elsewhere if there's a lot of flack there where they can't get down to the facts at all. But the fact of the matter is that something serious was happening up there.
Yes, it was.
Still going on?
Yes, it is, but perhaps not to the same extent. I can recall packing several suitcases with this rather exotic equipment, and the people at the health physics department of the university said, well, you'll be protected up here. And the protection consisted of some journalists that had guns under their raincoats at the stopping point. We were really playing cops and robbers.
It doesn't help much, does it?
Not very much, but
I'm a journalist, and if I had a gun under my coat, your life is in danger because I think it's going to go off, you know, because I don't know how to use it.
We were very, very apprehensive about going up there. When we set up the magnetometers on the first day, we got absolutely nothing, and I began to believe that maybe these people were seeing things or hearing things. On the second day, we found a humongous signal, around 200 microgauss, that was booming in at several of the locations in Eugene, Oregon. We had Kay Prince with us then, who was the radiological health officer for the state. We had Mike Talley, who was the journalist who'd originally taken it upon himself to break this story in the Register Guard. And we had Marshall Van Ert, who was the health physicist from the university. And we absolutely, totally established that there was this new magnetic pulse signal. We made these recordings. I still have the telemetry tapes that we took at the place. The government's response was to send the EPA. Dr. Rick Tell arrived with a very large truck. I have no idea how much equipment he had in that truck. I've gotten to know Rick fairly well since this time.
Did he know what to do with it?
He did not know what to do with it. The receivers that they had went down to 10 kilohertz, which was all they had. Their spectrum analyzers did not go down to this low frequency. Now, of course, 1984, they have far better equipment, and I showed Rick how to build the magnetometers, which he now uses.
Is he still playing around Las Vegas?
He's in Las Vegas, I pop in on him every couple of years, and he reported that all of this was coming from a transmitter at Dixon at 4.717 megahertz. There was an encoded Navy transmitter down there putting out a very weird signal. It went... and
is that the old radio Jim Creek he was talking about?
Sort of. The information was in that little burst of white noise, and they weren't too familiar with it in 1978, so...
Was this the transmitter they used to use to talk to the submarines?
No. This was another story.
Okay.
But at any rate, we were there. We got the signal. The EPA didn't get the signal, and I haven't let Rick live this down. He attended several of my briefings in Washington when the government did take an interest in these things. I did some interagency briefings. I showed them the slides, showed them the tapes, let them listen to the signals, showed them the chart recordings.
Didn't make a dent, did it?
Not a dent. And I've had a lot of theories about this. Number one, they knew about it and didn't want to let on because I didn't have the types of clearances that would make me privy to this. I felt like a...
No Q rating for you?
No, not for me. or else they didn't want to admit it was not invented here.
That's a big problem that we've had here in the United States. If it doesn't come from the USA, it doesn't happen.
Right. At that time, the consensus was, and perhaps still is, that the Soviet woodpecker was a form of over-the-horizon radar, and it was being used to watch the ionization paths of the missile, perhaps missile launchings in the Dakotas, etc. And since that time, I think we've fairly well established that there is intelligence on the signals, that they can be used for underwater communication at tremendous depths, operational depths for their nuclear submarines. We definitely have established that in some cases this can be psychoactive, can alter brain waves, and there's more and more and more agreement on this now.
Finally. We've been talking about this for years, Robert.
Right.
We're finally seeing it, right?
I've attended several of the biomedical-type conferences, and we're just delighted now to see more and more papers coming out that these signals down in the microgauss intensity range that are so invisible that there are no instruments around that will actually measure them, and that's another long story. These things are psychoactive, and this would imply that man is a biocosmic resonator. He's tremendously sensitive to all of these very, very small variations if they're within these window frequencies of the human brainwave spectra.
Well, I think we should maybe kind of put it in another word. The whole human body responds to its basic environment, which is the planet Earth. And one of those responses that it has is in that range between 7 and 12 hertz. That's what the Earth responds to. And that's what we have over many thousands, millions of years have learned to respond to.
We've evolved with this. We're part of it.
Now, if we're taking a frequency which our mind responds to out of nature, amplifying it, and then putting a little subcarrier on that frequency, which is what the woodpeckers are, taking a basic frequency and putting another little bump into it, because our mind is so attuned to that frequency, we now can start controlling what the mind is doing by how we are subcarrying that basic frequency. Am I
basically being right on?
Just for a kid from Texas that doesn't know anything what he's talking about, I'm just listening to you and to Tom Beard, and I'm just repeating words here. No, I understand what we're talking about. But a lot of people don't understand the enormity of what that is. Let me take it a little bit further. Let's say that I was an aggressor, and I had the ability now to put this earth wave into the mind of all of the people that I wanted to conquer. And I had the ability then to subcarrier that and change their emotional complex, the entire physiology of their body, because I'm dealing with their brain now. I could make them, if I wanted to, if I knew exactly how to make that little woodpecker signal work, as we call it, or that little extra frequency, very docile.
Yes.
Very lethargic.
It's being done. The last conference here at the Pettus Veterans Memorial Hospital in Loma Linda was June 1983, and several people reported on their experiments, mostly done offshore. Our Food and Drug Administration is very sticky about using human experimentation, but there are a number of people around the world, Jose Delgado in Madrid, for example, mm-hmm. who's totally controlling emotions at tremendous distances with little bitty boxes.
Some with just their minds.
Some with just their minds. But if you pay your light bill, it takes a little less effort.
Yes.
It's beginning to emerge that we are having this type of a problem in our present anthropomorphic society. Dr. Ady had a fantastic little box out there called the LIDA, LIDA. And I think this had made headlines in a few papers just before the conference. And this had been used by the Soviets for brainwashing. In fact, it was used in Korea. That was 1950-1951.
Were we behind in this?
We're about 30 years behind in this, but we very well better catch up.
Imagine that.
I believe that the weaponry, most wars are fought over real estate. And if we
Our use, energy.
Right, exactly. And if we use fusion or fission, there isn't going to be much left of the real estate. So the next frontier is the anti-personnel type weapons, the neutron bomb, the ELF mind control. If you can get the people out of the way, the real estate's intact. So a great deal of effort has been put in investigating these. There are a few civilian fallouts in this that we
problems with the neutron bomb. It affects plant life.
Oh, then we
for
can't
many,
use
many
that.
Generations. And
right.
So there goes the food chain. And so your real estate isn't any good if you have no food chain around it.
So let's just scramble the brains and we've met most of our objectives.
Basically, that's what we're talking about in a way. The MX missile, the Tritons, those things will never be fired in the event of a full conflict.
That's group suicide.
There are other things to do that make those pop guns.
I believe this is correct.
I'm glad you agree with me. We're speaking to Dr. Bob Beck tonight. I'm Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mind. We'll be back in just a moment, and we'll open up the lines in just a moment. I want you to talk to this amazing man. Very, very... It's taken a long time to get you here, Bob, but now that we've got you for 3 hours.
I'm shy.
We're going to put you on the hot seat.
Uh-oh.
I'm Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mind. It's hour one of Open Mind, our new time, 9 to midnight tonight. With me tonight is Dr. Bob Beck. We're talking about the ELF signal. Let me give you some numbers so that you can get with us and talk to Bob about the ELF, about, well, most anything. Scalar wave technology? Are you ready to talk about that with this group tonight?
Well, not in too much depth. I wish I understood it that well.
It's a brand new thing that's happening, right. Isn't it? Free energy?
Okay.
Is free energy for real?
Yes and no.
Yes and no. All right. Good for you there. Talk about that. A lot of those things that may be on your mind, and I know it's on the mind of those out there. All of our numbers end in talk. In Los Angeles, 520 is the prefix and ends in talk. San Fernando Valley, 990. If you're in Pasadena, Glendale, Burbank, your number is 244. In the San Gabriel Valley, 448. South Bay, 679. If you're down in Long Beach, San Pedro, Paramount, Downey, that area, Compton, 639. And if you're in Orange County in the 714 area code, and the 619 area code, you're 750. If you're in the 213 area code, you're 448. There are so many numbers. You know, this whole world is just filled with numbers these days. Have you noticed about that? Where are we going with the ELF? Are we doing anything to counter this problem, Bob?
I keep hearing these rumors. I know that there are some telemetry links in the United States using similar frequencies around 10 hertz. A tremendous problem has existed, and this is how do we talk to our nuclear subs? Mm-hmm. So the scientists at large were mounting programs called Project Sanguine, Project Seafarer, Project Pisces, and they were going to put a 3,500-mile-long antenna up in Wisconsin and broadcast around 76 hertz and hope that they could get a couple of hundred feet through the salt water to give the launch orders. It was discovered recently, why the figure 76 hertz? We had sort of stolen it from the Soviets because that was one of the bad guys and it had been a case of reverse intelligence worked on our own people. But fortunately, a lot of environmentalists sort of put the kibosh to this and we're looking at more exotic ways to communicate underwater, and I do believe the Soviets are ahead of us on this problem also. But yes, it's here. We have to live with it. Smallpox is gone, but ELF is back.
ELF is back. Some of the other effects of ELF, it does some strange things to the atmosphere, does it not?
When you put that much energy into any type of a closed system, the ionosphere, the jet wind paths, etc., don't forget that the transmitters at Riga and Gomel were estimated to have a peak power of 40 million watts.
And we only have 5,000 watts at this radio station, so that'll give you an idea.
Is that why I can't get you on the road?
<That's it.
laughs> Pay your bill.
We're just a little teapot.
Okay.
Everybody listens to it, but we're nevertheless a teapot.
When you put that much energy into the atmosphere, you're bound to heat up some of those ducting paths in the ionosphere. There are two possible ways of transmitting energy around the globe. One is the old bounce theory that was dear to our hearts when I was in college. The other is that the energy can actually be trapped in certain layers of the heaviside layer, and like a light pipe will come a certain direction and then dump off depending on the physics of the sunspot activity, etc. We'll talk about this a little bit in the seminar next weekend. But at any rate, yes, it's here. It's very real. I think it has been disturbing the ecology and our entire biosphere for a number of years. The weather patterns have certainly been unusual.
Well, there's a lot of data to suggest that something outside of nature is happening. For instance, we look at last year. We already looked at the record cold temperatures that are coming down this year. very, very early in the northern tier of states.
Exactly.
It seems to me if this pattern exists, which is not natural, I mean, you can go back through all of the patterns of the way nature has run weather, we didn't see a year like last year.
There really is no historical precedent, at least.
And for us to sit around and think that that's just happening because, you know, God wanted it to be that way is a little dumb, I think. Whenever we can see this electromagnetic disturbance going on, we can measure it. And politics or whatever stops us from doing anything about it, or perhaps inability to do anything about it. But it seems to be there. Do you predict or portend another terrible winter?
I don't know. I hope not.
It's hard to say, but I mean, we're seeing the electromagnetic disturbance continue.
Most of these Soviet and domestic plans seem to backfire eventually, and maybe they've learned not to do it anymore. We're still selling them wheat.
I think that was probably one of the basic reasons they did it, was to move water up into their agricultural lands. But
who knows?
It has a tail end which ended up in the United States. So it's a very complicated process. You're ready to talk to some of our people? I know they want to talk to you.
Sure.
I haven't again asked you all the questions I want, but I don't want to forget my friends out there because they're smarter than I am. And Sal is one of them. Hello, Sal. What's on your mind?
Oh, hi, Bill. And your friend's name again is?
Bob Beck.
Bob Beck. Yes, sir. Yeah, God, it's a real honor to be in touch with you. I want to get this by real fast in terms of my intro. Bill Jenkins, to me, is the pinnacle of all talk radio. And I am so pleased that you are on an hour earlier.
So
I don't know where to write first, but I want to push you and support you because I think you are where it's at in terms of talk radio. Okay?
Do I know you? How much did that cost me for you to say that?
No, you've got a real friend over here, and you're going to be finding out about that more in the future.
Thank you.
What I want to cover is about almost 2 years ago, I don't want to mention the program, it was on KABC on a talk show.
That's okay.
I called up, and when the big MX thing was happening, I called up and I said, oh, come on. I mean, that stuff is so antiquated. You must really understand that. How could anybody not understand that this is, it was such an antiquated situation? I said, can't you see that there's other ideologies going on out there, other technologies that are much more advanced and it's not even being known to the public. I think it's criminal that it's not, that the public is kept in such ignorance, but that's a whole topic in itself. The thing I wanted to speak to Bob about is two things. I wanted to make a statement and ask a question about this one topic. The greenhouse effect and the weather control situation is something I've been really surmising for a long time, and I feel that the new information I've been getting as a result of your program is really enlightening, and it explains some feelings that I've had for a long time about it. The one book that I wanted to mention on the air was The Survival of Civilization by John D. Hamaker, H-A-M-A-K-E-R, with annotations by Donald A. Weaver, W-E-A-V-E-R. And The Survival of Civilization is a very excellent book that goes in depth about why the carbon dioxide and the greenhouse effect and what to actually do about it. And I'm only mentioning it because of that, because he's got a solution. I've heard people complain about it and talk about it, but I haven't heard much solutions other than going to Mars and living over there or that kind of a thing.
All right, your question for Bob then is concerning the greenhouse effect,
right? The greenhouse effect and what basically...
What can we do?
He's got on that topic.
Okay.
And then I wanted to say one other thing after that.
All right, Sal, I want you to make it quick. There are a lot of people on the line, but we'll go ahead and try to...
I'm going to make a quick answer. I don't know.
Okay.
Boy, that'll help us out a lot.
Okay.
Okay, and then...
Of course, I've heard Lowell Ponte's versions of this, and I've talked with a few people who are investigating it, but I just frankly don't know.
I think one of the quickest things that we can do, and maybe, Bob, you will agree with me, is to stop burning fossil fuel to create our energy.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And I think we're on a threshold of that, so we're seeing a whole new day dawn on that, although the power bases don't like it.
There was a brand new patent issued to a fellow named Marks, M-A-R-K-S, in April of this year. That's a solar panel about 3 by 4 feet that should power an entire house. It's a number of little micro arrays. It's about 80% efficient. All of this technology is right on our doorstep today, and I'm looking forward to no more fossil fuels.
Next week, we will have John Bedini here.
Well, great.
Who seems to have an answer for us. It's your test out. And he has gotten it into solid state, so...
I've been a visitor in his lab, and he's certainly on the right track.
And we're talking about no fossil fuel here. We're talking about no fuel at all. And we're excited about what he is doing, but we, you know, time will tell.
Time will tell. Bill?
Yes.
I'd like to, first of all, indicate that I had a friend of mine that I was a witness to this device that was most unusual, and I'd like to talk to you about it. And he was bothered by the local government, and I couldn't understand why, but he had made this incredible breakthrough. And basically, he explained it. He said, any time that you antiquate an existing system, you're ready to get shot. And
well, those times
I'd like to talk to you about this and get you a copy of the book I just mentioned, and I'd like to know how I can get in touch with you off the air, you know, just...
Please call me here at the radio station. I'm here from 9 to 4 every day, and totally accessible.
Okay, well, I will be reaching you then.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll be back to Bob Beck, you, and we're talking about science tonight.
Just a shortwave receiver, and sure enough, there's a rather interesting sound coming out. What exactly is that supposed to be?
This was a Navy transmitter at Dixon, California, and it was a beep, 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 and a burst of white noise. And at the time of the flap, when the ELF problem developed in Eugene, Oregon, Dr. Rick Tell, who's the Western Regional Director of the Environmental Protective Agency, said, well, we think that this is the signal that's causing the problem, which, of course, it was not. That was the significance of that comment.
Mm-hmm. Do you know that it's still on there?
Well, I check it every year or so, and I wasn't aware it was still on. No,
I heard it beep, beep, beep in the background.
Yeah, you want to hear this?
Yeah, could you?
Put it on.
That's it. You got it.
And it's coming in very strong. It's at plus 30 decibels.
Oh, excellent.
On sideband, it sounds like this.
You got it.
You've got it.
And it's right at 4717, so it's whatever 4.717 it was.
4.717 megahertz, yes, exactly. Well, hey, thank you very much for that. I feel like I'm listening to an old friend.
They're still out there.
By the way, this was not the cause of the problem back in Oregon.
And that music means that we have got to go take a break for news, but we'll be right back with Dr. Beck after the news. Awesome, but in itself beautiful whenever you apply it in the right way. As is the way science has always been. It can be beautiful or it can be awesome. Right, Bob?
Right on.
And we're open to talk to you. We have Paul on the line, I think. Right? No, is that Paul? Yeah. Paul, you there?
Hello, yes.
Yeah.
What's Hi, Bill. Way? I'd like to ask Bob a question.
Hi,
a friend
Paul.
Of mine takes the McKeever investment letter, and he said that about a year ago or so, they mentioned some of the things about the weather control. And that President Carter sold the Russians a ELF generator or something of sort, one of the largest ones available. Or I don't have the details on it, unfortunately, and I was wondering if you knew anything about it.
I hadn't heard that before.
I don't know why the Russians would be wanting to buy one from Jimmy Carter, being that they have them over there in the first place. I doubt if Jimmy ever heard of it.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I'm going to try and get a copy of that and maybe I can attend your lecture and show it to you or something.
A strange thing happened after I published some of this in 1977 when I saw the reprints of what I had written in a number of these little bulletins and newsletters. I could hardly recognize the original at all.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, typical press distortion.
Well, that's not press there.
Or newsletter, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, just anybody, I think, takes a body of material and they put out whatever it is that they want to put out.
Okay.
And it's kind of hard to... there's no way you control that. You make a statement. And if people take that statement out of context, take a first sentence, last sentence, middle sentence, or whatever it is...
I wish I had the copy of it here so I could, verify it more myself or at least say what specifically it did say. But I just wanted to check on that.
However, I would suspect...
Paul, if you're coming to the little get-together we're having next weekend, I wish you'd bring that along if you can find it. It should certainly make some interesting commentary.
Go over where the get-together is going to be, would you?
Okay, I'm actually a little embarrassed to do this, but my friend Paul Andrews has put together a thing because we both feel that it's very significant. It will be Hidden Influences in Modern Health and Disease, an Electromagnetic Survival Seminar. What we plan on doing is demonstrating a lot of these instruments that we used in the investigation and passing away perfectly free the circuit diagrams of this stuff so that attendees who are not electronically impaired can build their own goodies and go out and find out where the hot spots are. And this is going to be at the Los Angeles Airport Marriott Hotel on Saturday, October the 13th from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. And if you need information, and we will need reservations, call at area code 213-393-9405. Once more, that's 393-9405. And during this day, there'll be a lot of slides, a lot of graphs. We might wire up some people and show them their brainwaves on the scope and what can happen to them when these little boxes go on and off. We'll give you enough information to build your own stuff and go out there and do your own thing. We feel that that's the backbone of scientific method.
That's where it happens. The genius is among the people.
If we can't replicate these things, we might believe they no longer exist. So if you're interested in this, call 393-9405, and the folks will give you more details on it. But we should be seeing a whole lot of interesting things there.
Does that help you, Paul?
Yeah, that covers it, and I'll be there.
All right, Paul. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
For the information. It doesn't sound quite right, but who knows? You know, stranger things have happened, I suppose. We have Mamie on the line.
Hello?
Hello, Mamie.